Hey, it's Truth About Markets time on Resonance 104.4 with Max and Stacey. I'm Max, and hi, Stacey.
Max Kaiser. There's so much going on. Again, Bitcoin is in the news, but what else is in the news? Oh, Max and I have a big show out today on Kaiser Report. We have Jeremy Scahill refused to show up for a show. We interviewed a red pepper instead, because we didn't want to use a tub of lard, because that's a little bit too right wing. We went with a more progressive red pepper. And we are, in fact, as we speak, as you're listening to us, we're in fact in Brick Lane at the Bitcoin Expo.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And it's a huge turnout because Bitcoin is sweeping the globe. And interesting on that front, you have another one, another fella, who has moved from the negative Bitcoin or ambivalent Bitcoin camp to the positive Bitcoin camp. And I'm speaking about Bill Still. Hi, I'm Bill Still. I'm still talking about the banking system and the economy. You know, Bitcoin is freaking great. I put some money into Quark and it appreciated 1,000%. I'm Bill Still. So anyway, Bill Still, who we've had on the Kaiser Report before, who's a filmmaker and educator and all-around smart guy, covers monetary theory, monetary history, and highly respected, big critic of the central bank. So I think we're trying to recall, we had him on the show a while ago. He was, you know, dismissive of Bitcoin at the time. This was a year ago or so. Now he's come around. You know, he sees what's happening, how the world is being transformed. And that's a very interesting development.
Well, exactly. Because when we talked to Bill Still about a year and a half ago, we assumed he would be one of the sorts that was most like it, because it was described, it has been described, Bitcoin has been described as a digital tally stick, and Bill Still is big on tally sticks.
Yeah.
So basically the inability to double spend, you can't double spend a tally stick, mm-hmm. and you can't double spend a Bitcoin. It's on the blockchain. Everybody could tell if it's being double spent. And so we assumed he would like it, but at the time he was like most of the people in our comment section on any of our YouTubes back at Kaiser Report. If you check back from 2011 and 2012, we would receive extreme amounts of hate. And in fact, it was the extremeness of the hate that drove us to actually investigate Bitcoin even deeper, because I wanted to know why people were so scared. Anyway, it's now become so mainstream because, of course, we were the only people talking about it on Kaiser Report and right here on Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM. And now everybody's talking about it. It's on ITV, for God's sake, last night.
Right. Well, it is changing the world, just like email changed the world and P2P file swapping changed the world. And it's changing business. It's changing the way money is being sent around. It's changing the way people get things notarized. Changing the way real estate is transacted around the world, and how services that are in the business of title and title insurance are being basically squeezed out of existence. The money senders like Western Union are now going to be squeezed out of existence. And the remittance industry is a huge development. And these people who would get maybe $200 or $300 sent to them overseas from their relatives working in the West or in developed countries, you know, these overseas remittance services would charge on a $200 transaction, they would charge $10, $11, $12. If you use Bitcoin, of course, that cost is virtually zero. So if you're relying on $200 a week or a month to live on, being able to save $10 or $11 or $12 is a really big deal. You know, your income just went up by 20% in an instant. Imagine if you were suddenly, you know, working here in London, making 50,000 pounds a year. And then, you know, suddenly now someone said, oh, and we're going to give you 60,000 pounds a year. You'd be pretty happy about that, right?
Dang, I'd be happy. Indeed. In fact, now a lot of the a lot of you may know that Bitcoin passed, what, like $1,200, $1,300? It passed the price of an ounce of gold. And part of this is because of, well, most of it is to do with China. And there's a rapid acceptance of it. It's being used. The first major move was when Baidu allowed it to be used. And it went exponential from that day, because essentially Baidu, they would be well connected to the government. So they would know what whether or not the government were going to plan on, you know, outlawing or banning it, or not that they could, but attempting to criminalize owning Bitcoin. And then the central bank, one of the people from the central bank, the People's Bank of China, they announced that they basically they're accepting it. And then today, well, actually, we're recording this on Friday night. So Friday, they announced that China Telecom, so the state-owned telephone company, will accept Bitcoin for payment.
Yeah, yeah. The China, on the regulatory front, people a few months ago were saying, America will never let this happen. The United Kingdom won't let regulations happen to let Bitcoin work. And people like us were saying, well, so who cares? I mean, if China's embracing it, India hasn't yet embraced it, but I'm sure they will also embrace it. If 9/10 of the world that's not UK or America embrace Bitcoin, then it's America's tough luck. You know, they're going to be left behind. So this new century, you know, every 14th year of the new century is when some epic historical event happens to define that century. And in 1914, obviously, had World War One. In 1814 or so, I believe it was a big year for Napoleon. In 1714, some other wacky stuff went down. Here we are in 2014, and I think this will be the Bitcoin will define this century.
I think you're right. Now, you talked about some wacky stuff going down. I want to talk about like the total crazy that happened on Friday, which is the notion of Black Friday has arrived in the UK. This is one of the most absurd things that I've heard. Even more absurd than the fact that Halloween is now celebrated so widely here. Because. I'll just leave it at that. And Black Friday. What is Black Friday? Black Friday is traditionally the biggest shopping day of the year in America. And the reason why is because it comes the day after the last Thursday in November, which in America is Thanksgiving. So all Americans have the day off, except for those who have to work at Walmart. But they're home for the long weekend. That's one of the few long weekends. I know you in the UK are used to all these bank holiday weekends. In America, we only have one or two. And this is one of them. Thanksgiving, everybody's home, and they spend the whole day together on Thursday with your whole family, and you eat way too much turkey stuffing, pumpkin pie. Friday, everybody's hates each other and they go out shopping. And there are stampedes, famous stampedes now, because, you know, in order to attract business, all these so-called Walmarts and like the likes of the world are offering alleged discounts. And people, you know, shoot each other, stab each other for $2 towels.
Yeah, the fact that it's moved to the UK brings up an interesting question. Do people go to these huge shopping events for the discounts, or do they go looking to get into brawls? Do they look to getting into fights? Because here in the UK, people go, do they go to the football matches to watch football, or do they go to get into brawls? I mean, in some cities, really, the people go to get into brawls. The football is the last thing in their mind. They couldn't tell you the score. They're completely drunk, and they're just there to fight. So now, in America, shopping has become an excuse to fight. And every year, at least one or more people die. They get gunned down trying to get a discount on a TV. Now, of course, the name Black Friday refers to the fact that these big retailers in America are operating in the red all year until this weekend, when now, for the first time during the course of their fiscal year, they are operating in the black. So all the profits for retailers in America, and I'm sure this is true in most of the developed countries, occur in the last few weeks of the year. Up until then, they're operating at a deficit. So Black Friday, hence the name Black Friday. The strange tradition started when these big retailers decided that there would be a big after Thanksgiving Day sale. You know, here in the UK, they have Boxing Day, right, which is the day after Christmas. And it's called Boxing Day. I think it's my understanding is because British people put out the boxes, the empty boxes out onto the street that they opened up during Christmas.
No. It's like the posh thing, basically, because all the servants have to work on Christmas serving the Downton Abbey Lady Mary types. Boxing Day was the day after that they would get the day off, and they would have their little boxes of gifts, I guess, from their bosses.
Okay, well, that's one theory. That's a competing theory. But it's Boxing Day, the day after Christmas. Now, there is no Boxing Day in the U.S. There's the day after Christmas. There's nothing special about it. No one has any name for it at all. So it was made famous, Boxing Day, recently because of the Boxing Day tsunami that hit the Indian Ocean. And was devastating, and all those incredible videos on YouTube of a tsunami rolling through town that were unbelievable. So in America, though, they have Black Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving. And so it turned into a day where retailers would offer sales, big sales, you know, Christmas shopping, because people are shopping for Christmas. It's the first day of shopping for Christmas. The Christmas shopping season begins on the day after Thanksgiving. So retailers say, come on down and do your Christmas shopping, and there's going to be some sales, big sales. You know, we got the hottest Christmas gift of the year, whatever it is that year, on sale. Come on down. So then over the past 10, 15 years, it's become the sale. People then would not shop at all year long. So the fact that the retailers weren't making any money all year is because people stopped shopping during the course of the year, waiting for the sale to happen on the day after Thanksgiving. So that's one reason why the retailers weren't operating in the black, because people weren't shopping because they're waiting for Black Friday. So you put all this into the mix, and you have people who have pent up shopping needs that they have been storing up for months and months and months. They have to get food. They have to get essentials for their home, but they're waiting for Black Friday. Then you have the big sale and the media hype, and then the thugs come, and you end up with these brawls breaking out at Walmart, just huge waves of humanity crashing into each other, grabbing at these Chinese-made slave goods, and invariably people get trampled upon. They're dead. And this has become part of the festivities. So I guess it's kind of like, here in this country, right, they burn a Catholic in effigy during the Guy Fawkes Day. In America, they actually kill people for Black Friday.
They burn an effigy of the Pope. Now, I looked it up while you were talking there. I looked up Boxing Day on Wikipedia, and it is traditionally the day following Christmas Day when servants and tradesmen would receive gifts from their bosses or employers, known as the Christmas Box. It's also called St. Stephen's Day in Ireland. In South Africa, it's called the Day of Goodwill. In Germany, Poland, Scandinavia, and Netherlands, it's called Second Christmas Day. And it dates back to the Middle Ages. And even that from the Middle Ages was adopted from pagan times, from Roman times. And I didn't realize this, but there used to be in pre-Christian Rome, there was a holiday called Saturnalia. And it was a Roman tradition whereby slave owners would switch roles with their slaves for the day. Gift giving was part of Saturnalia, and benevolence to slaves was a practice which may have influenced the later December tradition of boxing and presenting gifts to people of lesser status.
Well, that's interesting. You know, speaking of Romans and slaves, I was watching a video from the great Michael Hudson, Dr. Michael Hudson, who was talking about how Rome was the first empire in history to not cancel debt. They simply did not cancel the debt, and to keep people paying their debt, they invaded countries, ransacked countries, took everyone's possessions, took the gold, took the silver, took everything, but they did not cancel debt. Up until then, throughout time, you would have periodic debt cancellations or debt jubilees from various empires. And then Dr. Hudson was saying that it's because of this that Romans did not cancel debt, first empire in history not to do so, that you entered into the Dark Ages. This is what he says caused the Dark Ages. You had this group of people who became essentially the overlords who would refuse to cancel the debt, and then everything else just died on the vine and withered away. And of course, he's making the comparison to today, where once again the debts are not being written off; they're being hoarded to support the ever diminishing class of debt sellers, people in Wall Street and the City of London, for example, and leading up to what he says, and he says we're entering a new dark age.
But at least back then, as this article in the Wikipedia describes, is even the slave owners would have one day a year where they were kind to the slaves and took their place or at least cared about them. America doesn't have that at all. There's like 0 days in the year. And in fact, the UK is probably more stark, the treatment of slaves at the moment with the government. Not only did this week did we see Boris Johnson essentially say that if you're not rich, it's because you have a low IQ. He wrote this as an editorial taunting the poor of London. You're also having all sorts of rollbacks and benefits for, I mean, it's so shocking to see some of the stories for people who are clearly either severely mentally disabled or physically disabled, and they're being told to go get a job. And you also saw the other thing, which is Mark Carney has rolled back the funding for lending scheme. This was the first wave of Ponzi that George Osborne introduced in order to buy votes from a certain percentage of the population. And that is, they were basically giving 0% loans to banks, and the banks could use that money in any way they wanted. At the time, George Osborne said all of the money would go to small and medium-sized enterprises. That's what they predicted. And those small and medium-sized enterprises would then hire all you Brits, because, you know, SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises, provide 70% of employment in the UK. Well, apparently almost £0 actually went to small and medium-sized enterprises to business lending. In fact, zero did, because lending is negative. And all of it went to mortgage lending, to house speculation. So now Mark Carney is saying, yes, it looks like we're having a housing bubble. He's trying to be kind, because also the Bank of England did release this chart, which I'm going to say is the valuation measures for house prices lie above historical average in the United Kingdom. Right now, the ratio of house prices to earnings is about 7 times average income. That includes the entirety of the UK, that not just London. So, and London is higher than that. So you have that rug being pulled out, the funding for lending. You still have the Help to Buy scheme. But, you know, it's the beginning of the rug being pulled out of that Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of slaves, what about outright slavery? There was a case just last week of somebody here in the UK. They were found out to be keeping slaves.
And yeah, they found more today.
Okay. So, and this is also being discovered in the U.S. And around the U.S. and around the world now. There seems to be more and more information to exposing the fact that slave owning is back in vogue, owning slaves, and happening right here in London and happening around the world. Now, Boris Johnson, his comments, I don't see how anyone can differentiate those comments from this idea of a superior race of people. How is Boris Johnson saying the reason you're poor is because you're stupid? How is that different than anyone else in history saying scapegoating one portion of the population as being somehow lesser than? In some way, it seems like you know. I think you know what this looks like.
It's eugenics, and of course, he's saying that George Osborne, because he has tens of millions of pounds, he's smarter than you schmucks out there who have £5 to your name. So, that's obviously an absurd lie, because I've never actually encountered anybody not as intelligent, not more intelligent than George Osborne.
Keep in mind that these people have had their wealth stolen. And now what Boris Johnson is saying is the reason you allowed to have your money stolen, let's say through quantitative easing, is because you're stupid. So he's adding insult to injury. You know that famous phrase, adding insult to injury. So the injury was committed already. They stole people's money. They've stolen their wages. They've stolen their pensions. They've stolen their savings. They've destroyed their livelihoods. Now they add insult to it. He says to these people that he just completely obliterated with financial policies meant to bankrupt them by calling them stupid. So this guy is a real charmer.
Well, and the Bank of England data out this week, it's showing again, like real wages are down. They're down every single year since 2008. And yet debt, personal debt held by British citizens, residents, is now 1.4 trillion. Pounds, soaring, and it's the articles in the newspapers, just go out and get any of them, are saying that the recovery, the so-called recovery, they don't say the so-called part, but the recovery is entirely down to consumer spending because corporations are not investing and small and medium-sized enterprises are not investing. So it's entirely down to these Black Friday stampedes on your credit card and you know, the help to buy schemes that are just taking from the taxpayer. It's, again, it's like an accounting trick, basically. It's, you know, it's not counted on the balance sheet of the government, but it is a taxpayer liability that you're incurring. 15% of these mortgages are underwritten by the taxpayer.
Well, when they say the economy is driven by spending, they mean debt, because the spending is being fueled by debt. Corporations have never been more indebted. The government in the UK has never been more indebted, and the individuals have never been more indebted. And the country of the Great Britain has, I don't think, ever been as indebted as it is today. Over 1,000% of debt over GDP. It's similar to where Iceland was before Iceland collapsed. And that's what's growing. What's growing is the debt. And as we just said, the oligarchs who are pushing the debt, selling the debt, packaging the debt, securitizing the debt, and monetizing the debt are not going to forgive the debt. And so as more and more people end up going bankrupt, you've got people like Boris Johnson calling them stupid, which is then a prelude. I mean, he's saying that they don't deserve to live. Essentially, that's the subtext there. They're too stupid to live. Imagine that. The mayor of the London calling a huge portion of his population too stupid to live. Well, we know where that goes, don't we?
Well, you know, there was also another thing about London is that they were talking about savings rates across the UK. And London has the worst savings rate because, of course, everything is much more expensive here. So they said the average is £8,000 savings across London. But that includes the people with like £100 million because it's just the average. It's not the median. I'm sure the median is down at like £1,000. But so they're saying the average in London is £8,000 nest egg that they even have saved up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. So you have people living hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, or basically they're in debt. So they have negative savings. I'm sure that the median number is negative. So if you strip out the top 2 or 3% of those with 100 to 200 million in savings through playing games with the City of London, the average person has got more debt than they have savings. There's negative savings rate. So again, that's a misnomer. The average person, the average in the UK is negative debt, negative savings.
Negative, negative, negative. So that is that. So the rolling back. So Mark Carney announced he's rolling back this funding for lending scheme. Now, there are other stories we're covering this past week, which is FX to LIBOR probes leave UK traders seeking lawyers. So, yes. So there's all these probes going on. Well, you know, people are out there stampeding on Black Friday, now introduced to the UK, that these scandals are so absurd when you look at, for example, Paul Flowers. Okay, he was caught on videotape giving somebody £300 to go buy some crystal meth or cocaine. And this has become a giant story. Whereas in the background, here in London, This gets no attention from the press, no attention from the prime minister, unlike the 300 pounds taken by, used by Paul Flowers. You see, trillions of dollars are rigged, manipulated, stolen every day via London, from Forex trading to LIBOR. And now they're investigating. This has happened in the last week, and it really hasn't got much attention either. And that's the gold fix. The Financial Conduct Authority here in London is opening an investigation, saying that it's rigged by the participants in it, the few banks that set the London gold price fix. And Germany, German regulators are also investigating that. We're going to talk to Ned Naylor Leyland next week about this. But what do you have to say about this, Max Keiser?
Well, it's funny how this investigation is now officially opened about a week or two after Bart Shilton left his role of the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation, the CFTC, which up until his departure was investigating, had an open investigation into silver market rigging and gold market rigging, and as part of a whistleblower, and they had all the evidence. And then as we predicted, without a shadow of a doubt, we predicted that he would bury it. So right before leaving, he buried it, and then he left. And now they're going to open up an investigation into gold rigging. Of course, are they going to reference all the current information that they have on silver and gold rigging from 5 years of that investigation? No, that's all been buried. They're going to open up a new investigation. They'll spend the next 5 years investigating it. They'll prove basically that it's true. But either A, there'll be a huge financial crisis in which they'll bury it, or B, whoever's running it will leave office and they'll bury it, or C, there'll be an overrun of the gold fix as part of a global re-ratcheting of currencies, and it won't matter anymore because gold will be at $20,000 an ounce.
So there, the article is, German watchdog starts probe into gold price fixing. Germany's financial watchdog BaFin has started a probe into suspected manipulation of benchmark gold and silver prices by banks. The Wall Street Journal Deutschland website reported on Tuesday. Regulators across the globe have increased oversight of the financial sector. Yeah. And banks' reputations have been battered by a series of scandals, including trying to manipulate key benchmark rates, such as LIBOR interbank lending rates. You know, these benchmarks are kind of like the prism through which we are able to view the financial markets and the health of it. So they're manipulating the financial environment and economic environment in which you live. And the reason why they're doing that is so that you continue to go out to Black Friday and stampede, that you continue to consume far more than you earn on your credit cards, and so that you continue to hope to get on the so-called property ladder, which really you're hoping that there are more suckers out there so you can quickly flip your house to them.
Well, that's right. You know, it goes back more than 100 years. A conversation was had between a fella named Mr. Dow and another guy named Mr. Jones, who were publishing something at that time. I believe they were publishing the Wall Street Journal. And they came up with an idea of creating an index, the Dow Jones Industrial Index, of the leading top industrial companies in America, and then dividing that sum by the 30 or so components. I think it's on a weighted basis, depending on their market capitalizations, and then presenting that as the market. So the market is either up or down, and people just reference that number, which is just 30 stocks, but this has become shorthand for the market as a whole. That concept has been taken over into every single market anywhere in the world, and we have these indexes that are proxies for the underlying market. What we've seen in the last 20 years with the birth of derivatives is the ability to completely manipulate the stock market as a whole by manipulating the index. We saw this happen during the late 80s, early 90s with the creation of the Dow Jones and S&P futures contracts. These were futures contracts that are based on the 30 underlying components of the Dow Industrial Average. And traders quickly figured out that if you could manipulate the index, which is just a basket of 30 stocks, up or down, the media would say, the market is up or the market is down. And then people like sheeple would jump in and sell the market as a whole, all 2,000 or 2,500 stocks, or buy all 2,500 stocks because of the manipulation of these 30 stocks. And the index itself is completely manipulated because every couple of years, stocks are swapped out and stocks are swapped in. So the components in the Dow Jones Industrials 10 years ago, 20 years, 30 ago, were completely different than the ones that they are in today. There's a few survivors. I think Coca-Cola has been in there for a while, maybe John Deere Tractor. But other than that, it switches over all the time just to create this ability to have a proxy for the market, to manage people's expectations about the market and thus manage the direction of the market. And we see that in the energy market. We see that in the debt market. We see that in the currency market. And of course, we see that in the gold market and the silver market. And by controlling the index, you control the market. And by controlling the proxy, which is a lot easier to do than the market as a whole, you do, in fact, control the market.
How about this, Max? I just saw this. It's a website called Black Friday Death Count. And I think you can set up a futures contract around this. So since 2006, there have been 4 deaths on Black Friday and 67 injuries. So just as an example, in 2012, 2 people shot at Tallahassee Walmart over parking space. There were 2 injuries there. Back in 2011, there were 20 people were pepper sprayed at a North Carolina shop. Most of them are at Walmart. There was a death at a Black Friday stampede at Target in 2011 when Target shoppers stepped over Walter Vance and he died. Southern California Toys R Us shooting leaves 2 dead. Worker dies at Long Island Walmart after being trampled in Black Friday stampede. So, you know, you can kind of create an index, I suppose, around this.
Oh, that's for darn sure. You can definitely create plenty of contracts around the Walmart death and injury index. Clearly, you'd have a big component of Walmart. So if you had the top 30 names, the big box stores in America, I guess Walmart and Target are 2 of the biggest. And it seems like most of the deaths occur at Walmart. Walmart's the biggest retailer in America. It's the biggest employer in America, second only behind the U.S. military, although I think they may have eclipsed the U.S. military. And the Walmart family is the richest family in the world. They are, if you add up all their riches on the whole family, they would be number 1 on anyone's rich list anywhere in the world. And it's amazing that the people who work at Walmart can't really afford to shop at Walmart, and they can't afford health care, so the government has to provide health care because the people who run Walmart are too cheap to give their employees health care, so they rely on the government to subsidize the health care for their employees. So, and you know what I saw last week, which was amazing, is that now you hear stories that people who work at McDonald's cannot afford to eat at McDonald's. I thought I would never see that headline, and yet, yes, I just saw that last week. What do you think of that?
I find it remarkable. You know, when I was, the thing about American restaurants is, unlike European ones, is you're not allowed to eat any of the food. So in European restaurants, they serve their, you know, the waiters and waitresses, their waiting staff. Here in America, you're not allowed to. So they don't even know what it tastes like. But yeah, that's remarkable. You know, they're opening up food donation spots and stuff. I want to show you a photo of today at a Walmart. This is a security guard got run over. He's lying passed out on the floor in a Walmart somewhere. As you can see, there's a $3.99 deal right behind him.
Oh, right.
So people are stampeding. You know, another thing that is kind of, you know, like watching a zoo animals throw poop at each other is... In where was it? It was down south somewhere. Oh, it was Kentucky. Yesterday, or the day before, a guy had charges dismissed against him for standing his ground, and he was standing his ground against a 72-year-old man who had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And this man wandered out of his house at 2 or so in the morning. This Alzheimer's patient. And in the freezing cold, it was apparently really cold, and he was walking around in the middle of the night, didn't know it was cold or whatever and was lost about half a mile or so from his house. And he was wandering around in the dark, and this 34-year-old guy saw this old man in his yard and shot him 4 times. So killed him. Mm-hmm. And so that's another trend, another sort of macabre index one could create, because now you're allowed to stand your ground against an Alzheimer's patient. You're right to be scared of these zombies, and you can shoot them dead. So a lot of these baby boomers in America, they only started retiring a year or two ago, and they're heading down south where most of the stand your ground states are. So it's going to be kind of like a shooting range. It's kind of like a Walmart sort of thing that you can start tallying the Alzheimer's patients who get gunned down in justifiable homicides. So, of course, by the way, that counts as a justifiable homicide now. It's been ruled a justifiable homicide. So those stats get used as support for gun ownership, sort of the proliferation of all sorts of rights to shoot at anybody. Is that, like, look, this man was able to defend himself from a 72-year-old.
That's right. It's justifiable homicide. So, therefore, we should all get guns so we can shoot 70-year-old Alzheimer's patients who are on their zipper frames, threatening to topple over and trip over themselves, but shoot them dead, and you got to get certified that you shot a geriatric in order to get your name on the tout list on the web, and make sure you get it certified. So make sure the state comes in and certifies that you gunned down an old man, a defenseless old man, with your new gun that you got at Walmart after you stab somebody in the parking lot, to get your standing higher on the Walmart killing list.
But I just find it curious. I look at that and I wonder why Americans are so much more scared than Europeans. I just don't know any Europeans that would gun somebody down just because they were out in their yard. They're more likely to go out there and say, "What the hell are you doing in my yard?" Or maybe call the police. I don't know. But they don't seem as scared. Like, well, Americans seem very terrified and crying all the time.
It goes back to Orson Welles' radio broadcast, War of the Worlds, which is a very famous radio broadcast where he broadcasts, I guess it was from CBS, and this was back in the 1930s or 40s, that Martians were invading from outer space. And a lot of people, you know, called the police. They shut themselves in. They got their guns out. And he had this huge impact across America. It was really a phenomenon across the country. And I think broadcasters picked up on that, and they realized that there was a huge market in scaring people to death. So when you watch Fox News these days, it's just War of the Worlds, updated. They just have the mainstream media in America is constantly screaming at people that there are aliens invading from Mexico and from Mars and from everywhere. There's snakes in the water. They're constantly trying to recreate the War of the Worlds thing because it works so well for Orson Welles. And as a result, people are buying guns and killing each other. But in Europe, you don't have the same kind of corruption of the media to that degree. You don't really have, I mean, you have some more of a balanced media, you know, in the UK, even though it's heavily right-wing oriented, there's still a few lefty journalists that get airtime, where you don't get that at all in the United States. There are no lefty journalists in America, full stop, not a single one on any network, without exception. And it's very true for radio, television, and most of the print is hard right. So as a result, to keep the hard right in power, they've got to constantly be screaming at the top of their lungs about this existential threat coming from Martians from outer space. And as a result, people kill each other.
Yes. So, you know, Resonance 104.4 FM is a musicians collective, the London Musicians Collective. And I know a lot of people out there are into art and culture. And I want to call your attention to a new play happening at the Camden People's Theatre. And I was sent a tweet by the author of this play, Jamie Griffiths, and he said to us, he wrote to me and Max, and he said, "Max Kaiser, you and Stacey Herbert's work are a huge influence on The Quant, a new play hitting Camden the 16th of December. So it's quanttheatre.co.uk. And you see, you heard there was a killing to be made in the city, so you studied hard, got into a good university, studied some more, graduated with honors, and finally landed a job at the world's second biggest bank. But the hard work isn't over, it's only just begun. There's so much to learn, your head is spinning. Don't worry, The Quant is here to help. He'll guide you through the complicated world of financial risk. He'll show you how to bend the rules. He'll make sure you know how to get out before the proverbial hits the fan. Just be sure to leave your soul at the door. A new piece of theater about finance, physics, and the cost of getting it wrong.
Sounds good. When does it start?
December 16th is at the Camden People's Theater, which is, a well-known one. There are two quotes here. Risk is a dangerous product. Like nitroglycerin, it's unstable. If you don't handle it correctly, it will blow up in your face. And the other quote is, people are not elegant like our equations. They are not self-contained like our calculations. They are not predictable like our models. And Jamie Griffiths is a writer-performer based in Hackney. His play Cuckoo was shortlisted for the 2012 Papa Tango New Writing Prize.
Well, sounds good. We'll have to go check it out. We'll have to go check out that play in Camden. We're going to go.
Oh, honey.
We're going to go. We're going to go see that play. Quant. The Quant. The Quant in Camden. So some fella, I guess he listens to this show and had a brain seizure. Was confined to a mental institution for a while and came out and wrote a play about it. Now you can see how deep into the rabbit hole his brain went as a result of listening to this show. I got to give it to him, though. He can still, you know, put pen to paper or finger to keyboard. A lot of people don't make it. They just end up, you know, in the booby hatch for the rest of the bedlam forever. They never get out listening to Max and Stacy. You know, it keeps reverberating in their brain, echoing back and forth like a diseased echo chamber, a house of mirrors. And they don't make it out. And they never write the play. They just go wallowing in their own feces and screaming about Jamie Dimon. You know, those are the poor people that we have to give our utmost respect to, because they gave their lives so that we could watch this play in Camden called The Quant.
Okay. So grades continue. Oh, by the way, there's that Universal Credit Rating Agency. That's forming in Hong Kong, based out of Hong Kong. Dominic de Villepin is the head of it. And it's a joint venture of Daegong, Russ Rating, and a Brazilian one. And apparently they're fans of Kaiser Report. We're hoping to speak to them. But this was big news. From Friday, Netherlands was downgraded. They lost their AAA rating. Mm-hmm. And remember, this is one of the core nations that was supposed to be not like the periphery, those reckless spenders. Even though on paper, you could quite easily see that Netherlands has more debt than, I mean, the only thing close is the UK in terms of population's debt. And they've lost their AAA rating. And Eurozone jobless rate drops to 12.1%, but youth jobless rate rises to 24.4%. Now, that is the definition of a Ponzi scheme. And what is the big problem here? There are no new entrants to pay for all of those debts that you're counting on, not only flipping your property, but getting somebody to pay for your early retirement and your pension and your healthcare and all that stuff. So youth unemployment across Europe is 24.4%.
Well, getting back to the Netherlands losing its AAA rating. So how many countries were in the AAA club? I think it was five.
Yep. Finland. This leaves three in the AAA in Europe.
Okay. So now this has repercussions, knock-on effects, because AAA sovereign debt is used as collateral to build upon the balance sheets of banks around the world. It's what Basel III Accord from Basel, Switzerland talks about in terms of banks needing certain reserve requirements on their books to support their lending activities. And when you have a AAA rated sovereign debt on your books, you get to lend that out as collateral at a higher rate than other collateral, if you had a triple B bond on your books, for example, or some real estate on your books, you can't loan out against that collateral as high as you can, or as much as you can if you have triple A debt. So if the all the quantitative easing of the past 5 years, which was meant to repair the banking system and create sustainable growth, it clearly it's failing in a big way, because if another country now has lost its AAA status, that means that quantitative easing, not only is it failing, but it's doing the complete opposite of what it's supposed to be doing. It's degrading banks' balance sheets. It's degrading the global economy. And it's setting up a situation where you end up with hyperinflation, where instead of going to $85 billion a month in quantitative easing by the Federal Reserve in America, they're going to go to $100, $120, $150 billion a month in quantitative easing, direct outright monetization of debt. And a lot of people have talked about this for a number of years. It hasn't materialized yet. And the naysayers, like a Paul Krugman or others, say that, ha ha, there is no hyperinflation and quantitative easing is great and we need more of it. And that is the errand of a psychotic. And this is, in my view, proof that this money printing activity is highly dangerous.
So another data point for across Europe was that the number of bankers earning more than €1 million per year was up 11% in 2012. But if you just look at the UK, it was up 35% last year. The average pay of UK bankers was up 35% last year. And bonuses dwarfed basic pay last year.
Well, it gets back to what we say, that because bankers print their own money, you don't need people working. Because up until recently, the way economies worked is the gross domestic product would be a certain number based on output from workers, and that output from workers was taxed, and that tax was used to fund the government activities. But since government activities are now funded by the government's own quantitative easing, workers and their taxes are no longer needed. And we made the comparison to Saudi Arabia, where Saudi Arabia, they can simply pump more oil. They don't need to pay more workers or need more workers or even care about anyone living in those countries. It's abject poverty because they're completely unneeded. The UK and the US is becoming similar. The people in the UK are just not needed. That's why they're being treated so poorly. That's why Boris Johnson can say to the people in London that you're too stupid to live, because nobody needs them. As these banker bonuses point out, you just print billions. Mark Carney will print billions, hundreds of billions of pounds, and that goes into the pockets of the industry, and it never circulates. The money velocity is collapsing because they just steal it. They just take it. And the people are, by their very own leaders, being told to F off and die. We don't want you around anymore.
Well, you know, all of this, not only all of our lifestyles, the whole European scheme and our housing Ponzi schemes are based on a number of things. One of them is these young people. Now 24.4% of them are unemployed, have no job, and therefore very little prospects for the future. But the other thing that backs all of this, I mean, your government doesn't need you because they can print money, but they certainly need energy in order to print the money to not need you. So that was a remarkable story that we covered in today's Kaiser Report, which is that the FT was covering just the sheer scale of what is happening right now in the energy markets, of how much more real capital expenditure is going on for an ever diminishing return. So since 2000, energy firms have spent 180% more on capital expenditure in real terms and real dollars, adjusted for inflation and all that, for a 14% increase in energy. 180% increase in expenditure, 14% return.
That's right, diminishing returns. And in the energy business and in the credit business, they're very similar. The additional quantitative easing is not generating any kind of meaningful growth. And now it's being widely talked about that these countries are going to start to charge people to keep money at the bank, so-called negative interest rates. And that, too, won't cause any growth either. So the economies are collapsing, and the remedy of printing more money is making the situation much worse. And so it's just a matter of timing. And I think that the reason why Bitcoin is skyrocketing the way it is and the entire crypto market is moving the way it is that's the inflation. That's where you see the inflation. Where's all the money printing going? It's going into Bitcoin. That's hyperinflation. The UK pound is collapsing against Bitcoin. The US dollar is collapsing against Bitcoin because these currencies have now entered a state of hyperinflationary collapse. That's what people fail to recognize about Bitcoin. They keep saying, oh my God, the price is so high. No, that's not the point. The price is that the pound and the dollar are crashing against Bitcoin.
Well, and you know, gold and silver are also staying just even, but I think the US and UK are trying, you know, right now what you're seeing is two drowning economies, and they're taking the things they control. The benchmark rates for oil, like the Platts oil index, is the fixed LIBOR, gold fix. They're taking all of this down with them. But once they're dead and drowned, those things get released and they pop up. They're not drowned. They return. Oil will be repriced. Gold will be repriced. Silver will be repriced. All these things will be repriced.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we just said a few minutes ago, there's a huge inquiry into gold market manipulation, which is a known fact. I mean, LIBOR is known to be manipulated. Forex is being manipulated. And ipso facto, gold, either directly or indirectly, is being manipulated. Now they're saying it's directly being manipulated. So that means that when there is a point in time when prices revert back to the mean, and in the case of gold, that would be a lot higher. I mean, Jim Rickards just tweeted today about how when it becomes evident to people that gold is the place you want to be, there won't be any available to buy.
Yeah. Well, that's why, that's what Professor Fekete had also said to you the last time he was interviewed, that there would be no, you won't be able to buy gold at any price. There will be no price for gold.
Right, exactly. The price is infinity because there's no one selling it. No one is going to sell it. And no one, it's funny too, when people say, oh, Bitcoin is the problem, is that nobody's selling it, and the price keeps going higher. I'm sure, does that mean that when the price of gold is $10,000, people are going to say the price is in a bubble? Or are they going to say it's $10,000 because nobody's willing to sell their gold? There's plenty of buyers. No one's willing to sell it. In other words, you can't make the apples to apples comparison. You can't criticize Bitcoin for being too high in price because these other currencies are collapsing. I mean, if you don't want Bitcoin to go to $10,000 a Bitcoin, then you need to do something about the dollar and the pound.
Well, that's that's right, honey. That's right.
Yeah, that's right, damn it.
Are you allowed to say the D word?
Yeah, you can. Because it's like, do you remember that soldier that just died? He was in that film, The Dam Busters. Famous regiment of the United Kingdom Flying Air Force unit flying squadron, the Dam Busters. And they made a film about it.
By the way, who's up in York right now watching Ronnie O'Sullivan and Selby at the UK Championship snooker matches?
Yeah, who is? I wonder. Not us.
We were invited up there. Here's an opinion piece on the Bloomberg in the last few minutes. I'm going to say building better Bitcoins. Everybody's, there's so much attention. The world's biggest and best brains, not just the richest, because many of them are not rich. It's people that are just smart. Whatever Boris says, it's just people that are smart. Like, how smart is Boris Johnson that he gets stuck on a freaking thing flying through the air? Hanging there like a dork.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yet he's still rich.
Yeah, I mean, I guess using his logic, somebody should start throwing rocks at him.
Rotten tomatoes.
Yeah, he's too stupid to live, Boris. You can't figure out how to be on a zip wire. You're too stupid to live. Let's stone you to death.
Yeah, so they're talking about, well, they're not really talking about Bitcoin. See, the thing is, a lot of people get confused with Bitcoin, what it is. So they were talking about Silk Road being shut down, and then BIPS, you know, the Bitcoin Internet Payment System out of Amsterdam, they had $1 million worth of Bitcoins stolen from them. But those are the BIPS thing would be it. That would be the site. Their security measures weren't strong enough. And the Silk Road thing was, you know, a criminal got caught.
So the premise of the article is to build a better Bitcoin?
Yeah, to keep it from being stolen. But what needs to happen is somebody needs to build a stronger wallet. You don't need to keep it in an online wallet. You can download it onto a paper wallet or put it in your brain wallet. But, you know, right now, there aren't strong enough wallets that haven't, you know, it's often big sites that end up being hacked. Like BIPS is a pretty big one in Amsterdam.
Yeah, well, the fact that a mainstream media outlet can be so incredibly wrong about what a Bitcoin is and what it does, it means the price is going to go a lot higher because there's usually because the learning curve is still very, very steep. People don't even know what's coming at them, right? Coming at them right down the track. So that's good news for people who are bullish on Bitcoin.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM. And, you know, you might head on down to Brick Lane and possibly find a whole bunch of Bitcoin fanatics hanging out, Bitcoin bugs, bit bugs, kind of like gold bugs, silver bugs, bit bugs,
yeah,
hanging down at Brick Lane, having some Indian, some curry. And that's it for this episode.
Oh, bye, y'all.